Our next presentation is on the topic of cultural resources, and that's being presented by Monty Rogers of Stephen Braund and Associates. Monty has a Bachelor of Science in Archaeology from the University of Wisconsin. He's specializing in Midwest archaeology and is pursuing a Master of Arts at the University of Alaska in Anchorage, specializing in cultural resource management. As an employee of Stephen Braund and Associates since March 2005, he has participated in Section 106 archaeological surveys and monitoring, determining of eligibility of the National Register of Historic Places, traditional land use survey characterizations, and NEPA EIS analyses for subsistence, cultural resources, and traditional knowledge. I guess I should define the acronyms. NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act. EIS is Environmental Impact Studies. Mr. Rogers has been involved with the Pebble Project Cultural Resource Studies since 2005. His work has included acquiring necessary field survey permits and artifact curation agreements, cultural resource surveys of the mine claim boundary and Knollhead area near Iliamna Bay, Denaina and Yupik place name research in mine, transportation, and Cook Inlet drainages study area. He's also been participating in the preparation of the annual cultural resource reports delivered to the Office of History and Archaeology each year. Let's welcome Monty as he presents on the topic of cultural resources.
Hello. Jane, thank you for the introduction, and thank you for showing up to listen. So before we get started on this, I'll outline this a little bit. First, we'll talk about existing archaeological and historic sites and ethnographic resources in the study areas before we began our survey work. And the objective of our work was to characterize the cultural resources of the area. And there again, by cultural resources, I'm referring to archaeological, historic, and ethnographic. All of our work to date has been carried out under the Alaska Historic Preservation Act. And that's because the project's predominantly on state land. And so that's the overarching state regulations that apply to date until we get into the more detailed permitting process. And we've been conducting surveys out there since from 2004 through 2011. So, as I mentioned, this is the mine study area, and these were identified archaeological and historical sites before we started doing our cultural resource surveys out there. And a little pink circle in the middle is the general deposit location. And so looking around, one of the places we searched for sites is through literature reviews and database work, and we reviewed the Alaska Historic Resource or Alaska Heritage Resource Survey database. And there is evidence for three sites in the claim boundary at the start of the EBD, or in the mine study area, I'm sorry. For the transportation corridor, there's a lot more sites. And this could be for a variety of reasons. One could be survey intensity. One could be because it's closer to Iliamna Lake itself. And then here, for the Cook Inlet drainage study area, there again, there's a number of sites, and that's fairly common in coastal areas. And one of the interesting HRS sites in this area is you see a long linear line coming up from Williamsport. And that's a traditional trail and road that's been, the Russians even noted its presence in the late 1700s when they came, because it's a portage from the Iliamna Lake over the pass to the coast. And here's a few examples of the type of sites that have been documented throughout the study areas. And you see there's There's some prehistoric sites. There's a lot of historic sites. There's a road. If you look, second from the bottom is the road just mentioned. And then this is an archaeological site as well. So to discuss our surveys from 2004 to 2010, our surveys were done in coordination with areas PLP proposed for ground disturbing activities. And so that was one of the overarching themes of where we surveyed, because ideally we'd get out there before any holes were dug, and then we could assess the area for the potential for cultural resources. And when I discuss potential, I'm talking three things. One, that the area was used in the past. Two, there's evidence of that use preserved. And three, we can find it. And here's a pretty typical cultural feature that we've identified throughout the mine study area. And it's usually circular rings of rocks known as tent rings, but they're known for a number of uses, including high drying. And these tent rings take on a variety of shapes. There's circular ones, there's rectangular ones. Rectangular ones are usually pretty indicative of wall tents. So some of the artifacts we've been finding out there, here are stone cores. So when someone's going to make some stone tools, they'll find a cobble and they'll start working it down. And once they start beating on this cobble, knocking some smaller pieces off, it'll leave these scars on there. And you can see these scars radiating from different directions. For the one on the left, the large one there, that one weighs almost 9 pounds. And we found that along a small drainage with a lot of shatter around it. And so likely, we're guessing they found that in place and didn't bring it along. That size of rock is a little tiring to lug around. One on the right, that was found in another site not far from the existing, from this larger core. Both along small drainages. And they're both of an igneous material, pretty common in all the glacial gravels when you go out there and hike around. It's the most prevalent material. So when you strike them cores and start knocking off these smaller pieces, this is the type of stuff you get. So the bigger piece on the left is when you're first starting to strike these cores, and these big pieces are coming off, and they can be used for multiple purposes. You can see those long cutting edges there. Those are real nice to work with for hide processing, cutting stuff. And then off to the right is these smaller ones. So once you start working on an arrowhead and start refining it, you're being a lot more careful. You're using different tools like antler points and smaller rocks, and you're getting generally smaller debitage. So when I talk about making these cores and striking them, on the right is a hammer stone. So you'd use another rock to drive off these flakes. Then here's an example of a finished product. A very nice one, might I find, we found near Chiquita Lake within the claim boundary. So here's another tent ring. And we're finding concentrations of these tent rings around Wiggly Lake and Chiquita Lake and some of the smaller drainages. This is an interesting site. Although we didn't have any charcoal to date the site in radiocarbon years, some of the tools represent a cultural tradition referred to archaeologists by the Arctic small tool tradition. And actually members of the Office of History and Archaeology were on this survey when the site was found in 2006. And this site had artifacts on the surface and below the surface. Most of the sites we find in the mine study area are of surface nature. Here's one of our crew members digging a test. And this location is set back a little ways from a small drainage. Here's some of the artifacts we found again. The first one is, and this is slides just showing both sides of the artifacts. And so we're looking at debitage there again, some of that shatter coming off these cores. The second one, someone took a piece, one of these flakes, and touched it up a bit along the edges to make it more of an effective cutting tool. And then the last three are all small bifaces. And by bifaces, I mean they've been, someone's intentionally worked them on both sides of the tool. And they're generally spear points or knives or arrow points. And one of them, the end one, it looks like it's been through a fire because it's got what we call a potlid fracture. And anyone who sat around a fire and occasionally there's some rocks in there and a chunk flies out after it's been heated a little while, same principle. So for 2004 to 2010, here's all the sites that SRBNA has identified to date through their archaeological and historic resource surveys. And there again, at the bottom of the claim boundary is Chiquita Lake, and you see a large concentration of sites there. And then up on the north end is Wiggly Lake, and there's a lot of little dots there that, of course, it's hard to make out. And then, for the most part, rest of the sites are along drainages, although there are a few in the upper elevations. So for our work out at the Knollhead area and the proposed port site in the Cook Inlet study area, we surveyed a small location at the mouth of the inlet of Inniskan Bay. And we made two trips out there in 2005 and 2007. And in fact, that trip out there in 2005 was my very first archaeological trip in Alaska. It was a very good trip, great archaeology. And it's a fairly historically used area. There's a lot of documentation on that spot. And so here was our surveys in 2005, and we found two prehistoric sites there, both a little ways up from the actual coast, but in a rather steep environment. And I'll talk about these sites a little bit. One is a rock shelter, and it dates to, I think, about 1,800 years ago. I got it more in a later slide. And the other one is a little bit younger, and it's more of a hearth feature. So some of our other cultural resources work, as I mentioned, is ethnographic resources. And so as part of the EBD, or the Environmental Baseline Document, we consulted with a number of communities and documented Dena Ana and Yupik place names throughout the study areas. And we documented several place names, 950 in the Bristol Bay and Cook Inlet drainages. And this is just from published sources. And we mapped all of those, or mapped the ones that had location data. And from this, from these documented sources, there's 16 place names in the study area, a mix of Dena Ana and Yupik, but predominantly Dena Ana. A lot more place names in the transportation corridor, and then about 24 Dena Ana place names in the Cook Inlet study area. And all of the place names are in the environmental baseline. So here's a map of the documented place names that are part of the EBD. And you see a lot of them fall outside of the study area. There's a lot up in Lake Clark, no doubt documented through the efforts of the National Park Service. So for the mine study area, here is a number of documented place names from 2004 to 2008. Not a whole bunch. And then here's an example of some of the place names, their descriptions, language origins. Then here's for the transportation corridor, a noticeable increase. And then here they are again for the Cook Inlet study area. And here's some examples of the place names in the Cook Inlet and transportation corridors. So in 2010, Karen Evenoff with the National Park Service published some additional Dena'ena and Yupik place name research. And so what we did was we updated our place name research for the mine study area. And this increased the number of documented Dena'ena and Yupik place names in the mine study area to 32. And so you can see there's a little bit higher density now thanks to this current research. Also, as part of the environmental baseline document research, we conducted cultural resource interviews in 2007. We completed 32 interviews, all of which yielded very insightful information of the study areas. And we focused our efforts on elders knowledgeable about locations. And then we asked them about basically places that count to them. Village sites, portages, religious or traditional or cultural significance places, or even landscape features. And from those 32 interviews, we identified 783 cultural resource features, and 377 of those are within the mine and transportation corridor study areas. And here's a map showing all the documented interview identified cultural resource sites. And you can see there's quite a few of them. And so for the mine study area, for the most part, trails and routes and trap lines are crisscross the entire area with lots of camps and cabins. And here are a few other types of resources also identified, some battle sites, other types of cultural sites, reindeer stations, a village. And here's some place names and some, also some burial areas, but they are outside of the claim boundary for the EBD. And here's a few examples of the interview identified cultural resources. So battle sites, the rapids, that's on the New Halen River. Petra Falls, the graves at the Lower Tulerik Village site, different camps around Frying Pan Lake. So to summarize some of our work, for our surveys within the mine study area from 2004 to 2010, dug almost 600 shovel tests, located 48 cultural resource sites in the claim boundary. And these are predominantly stone tent rings and stone tool sites. But mostly these stone tool sites rarely have tools. They mainly have shatter from making the tools. And the oldest site in the claim boundary we've identified so far dates to almost 3,500 years ago. And the second oldest one is almost 2,900 years ago. From 2004 to 2010, and 11, we've visited the claim boundary 22 times. We continue to do the literature review known data sources. We can continue to submit annual reports to the State Historic Preservation Office. For the transportation corridor, we had one very brief trip in 2006, and within that, we visited a possible bridge crossing, and then we also tested at the quarry yard in Iliamna. For the Cook Inlet Study Area, we did surveys out there in 2005 and 2007, and I was on the surveys in 2005. We dug a little over 20 tests out there and found two new and identified two sites, with the oldest, I guess the oldest one dating that rock shelter site dating to almost 1,600 years ago, and the other site, which is actually a little up from the beach at almost 1,500 years ago. So for the claim boundary, all these green tracks mark areas we have walked. And so we have a good sampling of throughout the claim boundary. In fact, I think we've surveyed over 11,000 acres of the claim boundary with boots on the ground. So in 2011, we conducted 7 field trips out there to the claim boundary again, and the Office of History and Archaeology, through consultation, identified that they would like to participate on some of the field trips this year, and were able to participate in one. We dug 127 shovel tests, and we identified 2 new archaeological sites, and one of them is at the outlet of Frying Pan Lake, and it dates to almost 1,800 years ago. Also, as a result of consultation, we've began conducting cultural resources training for PLP employees. And this training helps educate PLP employees on archaeology, cultural resource laws, the types of artifacts that can be expected in the study area, and how to proceed in case they identify something in an area we haven't been to. And the training consisted of a PowerPoint and lecture presentation, similar to this, actually. And that's the end. Do you guys have any questions or comments?
Hello, my name is Harry Karshikov from Dalton. Who went with you to these sites?
Say that again.
Who went with you to these sites?
Well, we were very fortunate for most of the years that we were out there surveying. We almost always worked with local bear guards. One of which, who for most of our surveys accompanied us, was Larry Hill, Denna from Iliamna. And he was a wealth of knowledge and contributed greatly to the surveys. So it was nice to have him out there and get a local perspective on the landscape and surveying, and also ask him what he knew of the area.
Yeah, I know him. Did Karen help you?
Karen Ivanov, she has not participated in any of the surveys yet.
Oh, I just saw her over there. She's from Dalton too, so she knows lots.
Bobby Andrew Equak, were any of your findings recorded with the state for historical purposes, or are you required to record any of that?
Could you please restate the question?
Are you required to record or document your findings at the state or any historical society?
Yes. Because we're working under the Alaska Historic Preservation Act, we're required to turn in an annual report of our survey results and how we conducted the results and when every year to the State Historic Preservation Office and the Office of History and Archaeology. And one thing about the artifacts, we do have a curation agreement with the University of Alaska Museum of the North in Fairbanks.
Did that answer your question?
Phil North, Environmental Protection Agency. I noticed you had a list of villages where you did interviews, and I didn't see any, I don't think I saw any Nushagak villages there. And I was just wondering about that.
Our interviews were conducted predominantly around the Iliamna Lake region. I can ask, Steve, do you have insight on this?
Yeah, Stephen Braun, that's correct. We conducted those interviews in the communities closest to the project area. And we only succeeded in four of the communities, I believe, and we had tried at seven, and we just had a difficult time scheduling. That's a unique audience we were looking for in terms of elders and knowledgeable people, and we didn't succeed in all of the communities that we tried. I think for three, I think we got four of the seven we identified.
So I guess I'm wondering, most of the mine facilities that have been identified on any documents that have been put out so far are actually in the Nushagak drainage. So the Nushagak villages are actually downstream of most of the mine facilities versus the Kwichak villages. So it seems like there's a connection there that probably ought to be acknowledged.
Yeah, the next presentation is subsistence, and that we clearly went out into the Nushagak villages for the subsistence portion, and that's because they are downstream and water flows downstream, artifacts don't. So we were basically focusing those interviews on the cultural resources in the vicinity of the project area, of the mine project area.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, more questions? All right, well, let's thank Monty for his presentation.